Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome to the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and we are at episode 250. That is a major milestone, and I take this opportunity to thank everybody who has been listening along this journey with me, whether you're a long-time listener or you've just started listening. Again, appreciate the time and the investment that you're making, and hopefully I'm giving you good and valuable information. So again, I'll give you some news, bring you some updates, and then we'll get into our interview for this episode. So some of the news that has happened recently is that Microsoft has announced the Surface Duo. Now, the Surface Duo is basically a foldable device, two screens in a sort of a clasp environment. And it was scheduled sort of to be coming around Christmas time, but they brought it out, I suppose, early, about a year after announcing it. You can now pre-order it, and I believe deliveries will begin in early September in the US. Unfortunately, we aren't able to order it here in Australia as yet. Now, it's a very interesting play by Microsoft here. So the Duo is now running Android, a highly customized version with Microsoft apps on it for productivity. The idea being you use it like a notebook, a pocketbook, so you can, for example, view your emails on one side, write notes on the other, that sort of thing. So again, it comes from the Surface team. There are some videos around, which I will put a link in the show notes so you can go and have a look at it, get a feel for it. It is a very expensive device by the look of it. So there are two models, and basically I think it's 128 and 256 gig of RAM. Now, again, they are selling for $1,500 US, which makes it probably around $2,000 Australian. So it's a very expensive offering for what it is compared to, you know, what's out there on the market. Now, putting the price aside, I think they're obviously going for the premium offering here, which makes sense. That's what they've always done with their Surface offerings. So, you know, the price range sort of does make sense. And when you compare it perhaps to a, you know, a high-end phone, again, may be very similar. But putting the price aside, the form factor will also be interesting. So having a physical hinge in the middle rather than trying to do something like a Samsung Fold with its screen, will be interesting to see how successful that is. I've got generally very positive about it. I think it, from what I've seen, I think it will work well. It will fill a niche that's currently not there. A lot of traditional people probably still can't see the value behind it, and I agree that given the price point, it is very high for most people. But again, remember that when the Surface PCs came out initially, they were always a premium offering. They were always, again, aimed at the higher end of the market, and I think that's a successful ploy when you're looking to make money in the hardware game these days. These devices aren't for everybody. They're not an iPad replacement. They're not, you know, a laptop replacement. Will they fit into the market? Will there be room for them? It'll be interesting to see, but I think there is call. All the reviews that put price aside are very interested, very keen, very enthusiastic about the device, and see that it will have a role going forward. But we'll obviously have to wait and see what actually happens here. Again, I'd be interested to see what the Australian price is and when it will be available here, make a decision on that. But again, if I look to replace some of my older hardware, I may consider it. But again, it is a very expensive offering, and initially it's probably not for everyone. There's also that hesitancy around a version one of anything. I've had a version one Surface for many, many years, and they've worked well, never had an issue, really strong. So I have a great, I have great confidence in the hardware and the device. And this new form factor, and also being a phone as well, and data connectivity, We'll have to go and see. But again, have a look at the link I'll put in the show notes. Let me know what you think, whether this will work. It is missing some key components, things like NFC for tap and go perhaps as well. So version one, let's wait and see. Is this the beginning of what may be another successful line in the Surface division? We'll just have to wait and see. So read the view, have a look, look at the videos, make your own decision, and then by all means, please let me know, and we'll see how this new Surface Duo from Microsoft goes. Now, another interesting article Microsoft has put out is a very simplified article about the basics of security. So this one is titled Microsoft Office 365, Do You Have a False Sense of Cloud Security? And basically what they talk about are the three pillars here. So the three pillars are creating an emergency global admin account, enabling multi-factor, and blocking legacy auth. Now, all the stats reinforce that, especially enabling multi-factor authentication and blocking legacy auth can make a huge difference to reducing the risk profile of a business. Now, again, very short, very to the point article, some links in there for you to go and get more details about all those options there, but it's probably a very good article to send to someone who, you know, may not fully understand security or understand its importance in the market and is hesitant to use and move to things like multi-factor authentication. So good article, simplified, send it out to people and get more people onto the multi-factor setup and configuration to protect their accounts and their information. Now, on the security side, again, Microsoft has announced the introduction of EDR in block mode with Windows Defender ATP. So the idea here is that this is going to extend the ability to detect and then block and contain any malware or any malicious attacks on an endpoint here. And the idea here is it will provide the ability to detect and stop threats in real time, even if they have started running. So all of that will report into Defender ATP console. I use that myself, find that to be an absolute fabulous product, certainly recommend it. Microsoft has also done well in the recent Gartner Magic Quadrant, moving up there in front of many other suppliers. So have a look at this. I certainly think that Defender, with all the things they're building into it around the web filtering and so on, the reporting, the granularity, the machine learning, all of that I think is really, really powerful and should be a standard for most people. Now, remember that Microsoft Defender ATP does come with Microsoft 365 E5, but now you can also buy it as a standalone SKU if you want through CSP. Now, we're hoping to see some sort of Defender Lite perhaps, or some sort of functionality in Defender ATP brought to Microsoft 365 Business Premium. Hopefully that will come around the September timeframe when Microsoft has its Ignite virtual sessions. So again, keep your ears to the ground there. Hopefully we'll get something in Business Premium that will allow us to get some of the functionality of Defender ATP. But certainly if you haven't looked at it, make sure that you do take a moment and go and look at all the fantastic capabilities that this has to protect your environment, your devices, use machine learning, tracking, and so on. It's really, really powerful and highly recommend that to people. Now, another announcement is that there is now an option for users to report "this wasn't me" for unusual sign-in activity. So there's an Azure AD portal called My Sign-Ins page, and basically a user can log into that with their normal Microsoft 365 credentials, and that will show them, for example, information about where their logins and when their logins have occurred. Now, there is a button there for each login that you can say, "this wasn't me," indicating that maybe someone untoward has got access to the account. And then when they select that, it will then take you through the security info that the user has set up. So again, ensuring that your phone, your authenticator, keys and all that are set up correctly. And it is also a really good way for users to have a look at the recent activity. So you'll see when you logged in, where the location was, what the IP address was, all in a nice, simple console for users to be able to get those sort of reports and understand themselves where access has been gained to the Microsoft 365 environment. I'll make sure I put a link to that in the show notes so you can go in and have a look and understand exactly what that does and how that can be utilized. So another announcement from the world of Microsoft Defender is that the Azure Sentinel integration has been improved to get more alerts through. So when you have a look at Defender, you'll see that there are some options here to connect to partners. One of those partners now reports as Azure Sentinel, so you can do the connection from Defender ATP into Sentinel, but my advice to you would be to go into Sentinel. There is a pre-built data connector you can use to connect up the information and start taking the logs or taking the feeds from Defender ATP, send them into Sentinel for better analysis and reporting as well. So if you're not doing that, again, have a look at Azure Sentinel and its ability to connect to things like, you know, Defender ATP, Microsoft Cloud App Security, the Azure AD logs, and so on, and then aggregate that in a really simple console. Now, on that question of Azure Sentinel, I just let you know that I've also created a new Getting Started with Azure Sentinel course. So if you are interested in that, again, I'll put the link in the show notes. You can have a look at the course that I've created. A couple of people have gone through it and been very happy with the result, getting them up to speed with Azure Sentinel. So please go and have a look at that course that I've created as well. Now, one of the other apps that I really, really like and use a lot is Microsoft Whiteboard. So now that we're living in an environment where there is virtual presentations so regularly, I think having a whiteboard to get that concepts across. Now, the whiteboard, the new features include things like you know, post-it notes and, you know, lots and lots of additional features in there. So sticky notes, as they call them, we can add text, we can drag and drop, we can select objects quickly and easily, and is also the performance has been greatly improved as well. Now we can share whiteboards with others directly across the web. We can, you know, access them, view them in the browser or a dedicated app on most platforms, and it also integrates directly with Teams. So if you're used to using whiteboards and the visual side of it, you can use the whiteboard app to do that. I use that regularly, certainly recommend it. What I really like about it is effectively you're getting an infinite whiteboard that you can zoom in and zoom out and go to the left, go to the right and put information around it. And that whiteboard can continue to grow as you need it. And then if you want to, you can export it to a file, an image file or a SVG file, and then share that with other people as well after the fact. But if you haven't looked at Whiteboard and its ability to integrate with Microsoft 365 services like Teams, I'd certainly make sure that you go and do that, because it really is a handy thing. And for the visual learners, for the people that get information largely through a visual medium, I think it's fantastic. Move from a physical whiteboard to a virtual whiteboard. So go and have a look at that. And again, the integration is really what is the winner here. Now, on the Azure side, we do have some new capabilities here with our VMs. We're able to maximize the cost control with a new auto shutdown setting. So what we have in Azure typically has been the ability that, you know, at a certain time of the day, we can set it to go and shut down and do that. The advantages here that's been added is we can now look at the idle time. So before, we've had the ability to shut down our virtual machines at a specific time that we nominate. So for example, in my case, if I've got demo machines running up and I forget them, I would like them to be able to shut down, you know, at midnight or 11 p.m. because I'm probably not going to be using them. This here, again, is going to give you the capability to say, well, when there's no activity on the virtual machine after 15 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever, then go and shut that machine down. So that can be another handy way to go in and look at saving costs there. So again, I'll put the article in the show notes so you can go in and review that. And again, if you do have any feedback, any comments, any things you'd like to hear me discuss, please make sure that you do contact me. You can do that on at N2K Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. Feedback at needtoknow.cloud. You can hit me up on the Twitters at DirectorCIA. And if you want, you can send me an email directly, director@ciaops.com. Now, a quick information about our interview. Now, I'm speaking with Lisa Crosby about a new database-style product that back when we did the interview, it had just been released, and it was called the DataFlex product. Now, what's happened is that Microsoft has had some trademark conflicts with the name DataFlex, so it's now searching for another name to use. And so just keep that in mind. I'll put the show notes in for those items. All that's changed basically, again, is this moving away from this DataFlex name, but the concepts and the service behind it, again, is still very, very, very valid. So listen along. Hope you get some really good information and understanding of these new data capabilities that are being brought into Teams and linked with the Power Platform. Also, some good information on the Power Platform in general from Lisa. So with that, why don't we get into the interview for this episode? So welcome along to our interview for this episode. I'm joined by Lisa Crosby. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you very much for having me.
No problems. Well, I thought that we'd do a slight change of pace here and look at something that's obviously big in the news, big that Microsoft's pushing at the moment, and that is the Power Platform. And there has been some exciting news around that we brought Lisa on to talk about. But firstly, as we always do, we'll just get Lisa to introduce herself, let us know who she is, what she does, and a bit of her background. So if you do that, and then let us know about this really big, new, exciting announcement in the Power Platform.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Lisa Crosby. I am a MVP in the business application space. So that includes Power Platform and another product called Dynamics 365, which we are not going to go into today, but I cover both of those areas. I live in Melbourne. I work for an organization called Barhead Solutions, and I have a job where I actually do, I'm actually called a technology evangelist. It's like a technical marketing kind of job. So I do a lot of webinars, trainings, content, all sorts of things like that. So yeah, you and I met, I think, virtually through an M365 event, because there's actually a big crossover now between what I do and the M365 world. So Power Platform and Teams coming together, which is what this announcement is about. So it's kind of exciting for me when we see these worlds coming together and the products really strengthening each other. So that's what this is all about today.
So part of this, I think, is the I would suggest that being an old hand at this, a general direction I think that we're seeing is that in the good old days we used to get in and get our hands dirty with hardware, and we used to get in and do the registry and do all these hacks with on-prem things. Now we've moved a lot of those sort of things into the cloud, and Microsoft is doing a lot of the maintenance now. That has left, you know, a bit of a void in some people's lives as to what do I do now that Microsoft's doing a lot of that low-level stuff. But the big push, and I think this is the right approach to look at it, is a migration in the skill set needs to be made into this, you know, the Power Platform, let's call that, Power Automate, those sort of things, from even the IT side of things, because that's where the opportunity is, that's where the revenue is. And again, it would seem that Microsoft's adding lots and lots of facilities functionality into that aspect, and then using Teams as a bit of an operating system that is going to be a sort of a standard platform on which all of this is going to be based. So with that, why don't you let us know, you know, what's this big announcement that we saw at Inspire last week?
Yeah, look, you're absolutely right there. If you are looking for something to invest your time in, pretty much everything I'm going to talk about will convince you, I think, that there's an absolutely huge future in these products combined. So the announcement last week is of a new, don't even want to call it a product, because it's not quite a product, a platform, I suppose, called Microsoft DataFlex. Now, what this is about bringing a built-in application platform, low-code application platform, into Teams. So let me just level set on a couple of things, because I'm coming from talking Power Platform every day. This might be new to your audience. And also on Teams, you know, I think we've seen a massive, massive uptake on Teams in the last, you know, since everyone's been working remotely. But there's a lot of people just using Teams as meetings, chat, you know, perhaps moving into some collaboration and so on, which is awesome. But you're absolutely right in what you said in there, that Microsoft is actually really positioning now Teams as an application platform and almost like an operating system. So you start your day, you go in there, you bring in everything you need into Teams. So this announcement is another part of that direction. So Power Platform then, just to level set, is a tool set of being able to build low-code applications, workflows, chatbots, and it welcomes all developers. There are pro dev tools in there. So if you're pro dev listening to this, don't feel like there's not a place for you. There absolutely is. But the focus of this announcement and what I'm talking about is very much at the low-code end of things. So that tool set allows you to build custom applications with Power Apps for web, mobile, and so on. There's a piece in there called Power Virtual Agents, which allows you to build a chatbot with no code. Power Automate that you mentioned allows you to build workflows, got robotic process automation in there. So it's and Power BI, which most people are familiar with as the, you know, insights and BI tool is part of that platform too. So you've got a complete tool set of things there that you can use to build without needing to write code. And there's a lot of the capability there is around enabling citizen developers. So business users, you know, people who want to solve business problems and usually go running to Excel and Excel macros to do nasty things. But this is a tool set that people like that can use to create solutions to business problems. So what we're seeing with this announcement of Microsoft DataFlex is these two things coming together so that now there will be basically baked in Power Platform capability sitting inside Teams. You don't have to go out and find Power Platform. If you're in Teams, you'll be able to build a relational database, a proper relational database, not an Excel or a SharePoint list, a proper relational database right in Teams. You'll be able to build low-code apps, you'll be able to build low-code chatbots without leaving Teams. So that's what's been announced last week.
So especially on the relational database side of things, where is the data actually held? Is it in the Power Platform or is it in Teams?
Yeah, so there was a terminology now that's been renamed in all of this. So I'm gonna call it the product formerly known as, in fact, not the product, the platform formerly known as the Common Data Service. So Common Data Service, old terminology. So I'll use that to kind of explain where we're coming from here. Is the scalable, secure database platform, relational database platform that is sitting underneath all of the Dynamics CRM applications, is sitting underneath Power Platform as we know it. That has actually been renamed to Microsoft DataFlex Pro. So what we're getting with DataFlex is like a light version of that service. So what that is, as I said, secure, scalable, like, you know, the pro version, the DataFlex Pro, if you're going standalone, can scale to terabytes of data. You've got, you know, custom security roles, you've got reporting, you've got all sorts of storage going on under the scenes. Basically, the concept there is you don't have to go direct to Azure SQL. You can just do the plumbing's all taken care of for you. You can build a fully scalable, secure database with no code. So that's what we've always called the Common Data Service, now renamed to be Microsoft DataFlex Pro. And then DataFlex, Microsoft DataFlex in Teams, is the light version of that. Now, we haven't yet got full details of exactly what's, you know, where the differences are, but it's built on that same, it's the same thing underneath. So highly secure, scalable thing underneath, but they're basically putting a light version of it included in Teams so you don't have to go off and find another database platform.
So I think, is there a going to be one version for Teams across the offerings in Microsoft 365? So does every SKU get the same DataFlex Lite,
yeah,
or are there different, you know,
options? No, so there'll be one. So interestingly, instead of calling it DataFlex Lite and DataFlex, they've gone DataFlex and DataFlex Pro, which is a bit of a departure from how things are normally named, in that the core product has got the Pro tag and then the Lite product doesn't have a Lite tag on it. But as a concept, that's how it's working. So there'll only be one SKU for Dataflex. Like it doesn't come in. Like, so Dataflex Pro is part of the Power Platform premium licensing. If you want to go there, that's actually unchanged. It's just a new name. Dataflex itself will only have one option inside Teams, and it's going to be included in certain M365 and Office 365 plans. Now, again, you know, the licensing details haven't been released. That tends to come when the product goes GA, which is fairly typical, certainly in the area that I work, that the licensing is announced when the product goes GA. But the announcement is very clearly saying it's included in your Teams licensing. So I think there'll probably be some lower levels of licensing where it's not included, but for the premium Teams licensing, this is going to be included in Teams. So the intention here is very much about bringing this as additional capability inside Teams. It's not like an add-on extra license for Teams. It will be included in certain, and I can't say yet which ones, but it'll be included in Teams licensing.
The reason that I ask that is that you've mentioned things like robotic process automation and the Power Virtual Agents. Now, the disappointing thing I found, and if it's incorrect, let me know, but the disappointing thing I found is those SKUs to enable that in your environment are extremely expensive, especially for SMB, as I found. And it sort of tends to exclude those businesses. Now, of course, there is value in the low code, but you've also got to obviously pay that per month and then add on the skills and the learning and the building as well. So there's still the building component. So again, there is a fair investment, it would seem to me. Is it Microsoft's sort of approach or with these tools that it's going to be enterprise only, or do you see it potentially that when Microsoft's able to, you know, stabilize an enterprise version, it may look at a cheaper version? Because to me, again, the prices are, you know, again, very, very enterprise.
And look, I have absolutely heard that feedback before. Certainly smaller organizations do struggle with the licensing. If you look at something like Power Virtual Agents, if you're comparing the cost of that licensing to, I mean, it comes down to what you can save in the end. But yeah, absolutely. If you're in an SMB scenario, the hurdle of getting over that minimum licensing requirement is problematic. I'll in terms of what's going on here, though, this is the RPA question and the PVA question are kind of separate. So the because Power Virtual Agents is going to be included in this, or some form of Power Virtual Agents. So again, no details on specifically what, but it is definitely within the licensing, and it does say clearly, you know, within Dataflex, within Teams, you will have the it's like Power Virtual Agents for Teams app is what they're providing you. So I would expect there might be some, I'm guessing here, there might be some restrictions on what you can do with that, but it is providing a version of Power Virtual Agents directly inside Teams to build your chatbots. So where the boundaries of that are, if there are any, I'm not quite sure. So that certainly opens up the ability to use Power Virtual Agents in that small business. Actually, now that I'm saying this out loud, the thing to remember here is that this is all allowing you to build stuff inside Teams. So I think the big restriction here is that you can't use this license to build a Power Virtual Agent for your website. You're building a Power Virtual Agent for Teams. That will be the difference, now that I'm putting the pieces together in my head. So the idea here is you're building an internal chatbot for your users to interact with, to answer questions. I would assume not a chatbot to go somewhere else. All of this Dataflex stuff is very much about embedding these tools in Teams, not providing them as standalone tools. That would still be your Power Platform licensing. I would doubt very much that robotic process automation is included in this. Power Automate has add-on licensing for robotic process automation. That's very, very richly featured. And yes, that is additional licensing. I think you could connect to it from here, but you'd be back into your premium licensing for that. I'd be almost certain.
So I think the challenge is for many people is they see the benefit, we see it on the Microsoft videos and that. And again, I think it has a lot of validity in the SMB as well as the enterprise, maybe more so in the SMB, to automate that and reduce the overheads. Now, the example I've got is that you can create chatbots, for example, in something like Azure. Now, the Azure service is just a consumption service, so you just pay for what you use. And I've created that, and it's, you know, a couple of bucks a month. But on the Power Virtual Agents, as an example, all of a sudden, you know, you're jumping up to a, you know, three digits or more sort of investment. And I think that's going to be a bit tough. But if it is what it is, I understand that. I see that if they want to invest that. But
I think that the challenge will be is that if you want people to use it, you know, like I said, it's going to take a little while to obviously get up to speed as well as investing in that. So again, something if Microsoft can, I'm sure they're aware, is the fact that, you know, even some simplified version of that would support, you know, the SMB ability, and hopefully it comes with what you're talking about. That would be absolutely fantastic. But at this point, it's a bit of an us and a them mentality, I think.
Yeah, look, and I think the Azure Bot thing, again, that's a conversation that I've seen and heard come up a lot. I think the difference there is that, you know, I mean, yeah, you do have to skill up on any of these tools, but what you're seeing with Power Virtual Agents is the ability for someone who does not have the first clue what Azure is, no idea, is able to leverage that technology. So you imagine a customer service agent who's actually on calls with people could go in and edit a topic and update that with information on the fly. There's no development cycle. There's no, you know, like you can actually literally, it's enabling business users to build bots. So it's a very different sort of angle on it. And yeah, you're paying a premium for that capability in that sense. I'm not gonna argue that the licensing's not more expensive, but it's targeting a different kind of, totally a very different kind of user. But yeah, look, the, you know, a lighter weight version of that, would be nice if it was on the cards. I've certainly talked to organizations where that hurdle of getting in on that licensing is too high. So I absolutely hear what you're saying. One of the things, you know, just on licensing though, that we are seeing that's a big shift here with this is that one of the challenges we've had with Power Platform licensing is that people don't want to pay for the full common data service licensing. So a different version of this conversation that gets somewhat unpicked by this announcement is that, you know, previously to get common data service, as it was known, you would have to pay US $10 per user per month to get started with that. And that was an issue for some organizations, because what they would do is say, well, actually, we can just use Power Apps for free on SharePoint with Office 365. Now, I would argue not for free, you're actually paying for that license, but still it's included. So what we've seen is an absolute proliferation of people building Canvas apps and building apps, Power Apps on SharePoint, because SharePoint is the data source they've already got. But it's a SharePoint list is, you know, you can build something like a relational database, but once you hit 5,000 records, once you're getting into more complex and different types of data, it's not designed to scale like that. So I see people who start on SharePoint with Power Apps and then get stuck at a certain point. So this actually gives them a way to have capability of the full thing without having to pay for the premium license. So this is actually, in a way, unpicking one of the biggest kind of barriers for people around that, is that now you've got an alternative that's included, you know, I want to use free in air quotes because it's included in your license, instead of having to use SharePoint lists or Excel as a back end for those apps.
So I think that probably the best place for most people, I don't think there's a large population out there that are using the Power Platform in anger generally, especially in the SMB. I mean, they've looked at it, they see the benefits, and then it all gets too hard or too expensive and they, you know, put it on the shelf and don't come back to it. Now, I would suggest that it would be the best direction forward for them to actually start using it for small tasks. Now, one of the failures I see is that people come along and they want to automate this extremely complex you know, process they've got, and there's so many variables and it's very difficult for someone who hasn't got, you know, even some basic programming background to nut all this out and work out the logic behind it. So it would seem to me that the reality here is a good way to obviously utilize what you have initially and then potentially work out whether you want to grow into the SharePoint database or the Dataflex or whatever down the track. Was actually to jump in there and actually start, you know, creating something in the Power Platform, beginning to improve your familiarity so that you can gain that experience. Now, with that in mind, where would you sort of suggest somebody start? What's a good starting point to say, look, okay, I see all the benefits the Power Platform gives me and I understand there'll be costs down the road, but I just want to get my feet wet. I want to get in on the ground floor so I can build my knowledge. Where would be a place to start?
So it's really interesting you say that about, I'll come back to that question because I just want to comment on something else you said there where, you know, a lot of people have tried it and not got very far. It's really interesting to me to talk to someone like you outside of my little echo chamber, right? Because within the business application space, this thing is huge, but within the wider world of people using stuff, it's still got a lot of growth to go. So we've seen something like 3 times the number of users added in the last 12 months. So it's growing very quickly. And what we've seen is most people have got started with it because they discovered the button in SharePoint, or they discovered the button in Office 365 somewhere. So now what we're going to see is even more people discovering the button in Teams, because everyone's in Teams. So this is going to be like that next wave of growth. So in terms of getting started, I actually have run for the last couple of years there's a free training program called App in a Day. Now we're going to have to probably consider what we're doing with App in a Day in light of all of this stuff, because it's brand new. But that's like a free hands-on lab-based scenario that sort of takes you through the full capabilities of things. And it's run sort of through Microsoft as public free training days. I run it, you know, in the organization I work for at Barhead here in Australia. So it's a free sort of full day training, and you can actually download the lab materials. It's aka.ms/app-in-a-day, all as one word. We'll actually download the materials. So even if you don't want to go to a full training day, you can just download those lab materials and have a go at working through those. There's also an awesome blog that the Power Apps team at Microsoft have put together that lists all of the learning resources. So there's plenty of things out there to get started, and videos and things that show you that. But honestly, App in a Day sort of becomes the go-to starting point, either to go along to one of those, and they're run as virtual training days in time zones, like it's a global program sponsored by Microsoft that's available anywhere, or just download those materials. And that really does give you that good sort of hands-on way of getting started with those things.
I think that it's an interesting paradigm we're in at the moment, because you have the large community out there of end users who are wanting to use these tools and do that. You have a small subset who are, you know, Excel aware, who do know macros, who, you know, typically the financial people have used that and automated that to an extent. But generally the majority of the population has steered away from that. Now, we're seeing, you know, the tools become more readily available. So basically you can teach yourself any sort of code, JavaScript, you know, all of that sort of stuff easily on the web. And in theory, that's coming through, hopefully through schools and other opportunities. But again, I think that what is missing maybe at the moment more so is a core, you know, programming thought process. So when you do want to create or solve a problem using code, it is a bit of a translation. So it's like, okay, well, I'd really like to be able to do this, but I need to do these 4 steps to get the data in the way that I want it, for example, or convert this or do this. I think that what's probably missing from my experience working with users is that they know the end result, but the process in between, I think, is a struggle, because it does require a bit of patience, a bit of discipline to sit down there and start actually, you know, documenting and breaking it out. So is it fair to say that, you know, probably the best place to start really is to take a well-documented process, or document a process well first and then look at moving it into the Power Platform?
Yeah, look, I think one of the most common ways we see people start is to start with a paper-based process. So yes, something that's quite simple to say, here's a paper-based process, here's something where we're doing manual data entry, or an Excel-based process, you know, something where you've built Excel as you know, it's said that Excel's the most overused business system, you know, so where you're using Excel or Outlook or paper, that those are candidates for where can you look to replace those processes. And, you know, I think the way that I've learned most of this stuff, certainly I was, you know, I started with Power Platform about 3 years ago, which is when it was pretty much brand new. It's very similar to the way you learn Excel formulas, right? So that idea of, oh, I want to achieve a certain thing, it's easier to learn it if you have a context in mind, because, oh, I've got my process, I can determine what problem I'm trying to solve. Now let me search for the thing that I need. And that's where the strength of the community and what's out there, it's quite easy to find. Someone's done a tutorial, someone's written a blog, someone's on hand to help to build that knowledge, the same way you learn Excel formulas or those things as you gradually build up that knowledge. But you're also absolutely right that if you've got no underlying proper understanding of a business process or of that kind of particular way of thinking, then the skills to put the formulas on the page aren't going to that's not the only thing. And certainly, you know, I work for a consulting organization, there's certainly still a place there for consultants to help with that kind of stuff and guide people along the way. You know, what we see within the Power Platform community is people who've just picked it up, they're self-taught, they run with it. Perhaps they have those kind of business analysis skills and they're able to do with it. We also see, you know, consulting organizations still working with customers, but then the customers can kind of go ahead and they don't have to call back a consultant or a partner every time they want to change a button or make small adjustments and things. So there's all sorts of models there of people who will take it on and learn to build it themselves, and people who will build it with support of others, and people who'll get someone else to build it for them and then tweak at the end, or just benefit from someone else able to build on a low code platform, which means it's a quicker path perhaps to the end result. But yeah, like the skills of analysis and understanding and documenting business processes don't at all go away. I see this with the chatbots as well, right? The interface for creating those chatbots is so easy, but if your conversational design is a mess, the low-code tool is not going to give you a good outcome. Same thing.
So in your experience, are there any sort of common solutions that the Power Platform is able to solve for people out there? Is there any commonalities in the actual processes that you see in your day-to-day work that are common that people out there might be able to associate with?
Certainly the most sort of common one that people start with, that's the easy to start with, is the we get people to fill out a paper-based form. If of some kind, you know, when people were out in the field, we had to fill out a paper-based form. I had to, you know, people come to an event registration and we tick them off on a piece of paper. Like that's the easiest starting point, certainly for Power Apps, is that idea of some kind of data collection. But then to say, okay, well, where does that data go? Let's put it somewhere useful. Let's do something useful with it. So a lot of times Power Apps are being used to replace those kinds of things. We've also seen a huge uptake at the moment in a very common use case scenario at the moment is this idea of a return to work, like a workplace safety app. So things like, a check in and check out of attending the workplace or making a booking for a certain space so you can kind of track and trace where people are. So lots of use cases around that. Employee onboarding is another one that comes up a lot. You know, there are apps in there for things like managing leave requests and for managing HR onboarding. So any of those kind of administrative processes and things, right through to not exactly a business case scenario, but there are guys in the community recreating the Nintendo games of their youth. So just to prove that you can go as far as your imagination takes you with this, should you desire to do that.
Is it a recommendation to start with Power Apps first or Power Automate, do you think?
To me, it's sort of, I guess where your need is really, you know, I came to it from Power Apps first. I've got far more sort of experience in that space than Power Automate. In a way, Power Automate is the glue that holds the whole thing together. So as soon as you want to, Power Automate is awesome if your use cases are starting with things. So, you know, Power Apps, if you're starting with things that are paper-based processes and data entry kind of processes, is a good place to start. Power Automate comes into its own as a starting point if you're looking at things like triggering regular reports, triggering anything to do with approvals, notifications, connecting data between systems. You know, something happens here, I want to push that somewhere else or trigger something in another system. But in a way, to me, it's Power Automate, to its detriment, doesn't usually get to be the first piece or the hero piece, but it is actually very much the hero because it sits, it's like the glue underneath all of it. So Power Virtual Agents, for instance, uses Power Automate to take action on behalf of the user. So you can create a Q&A bot, but then you can say, oh, let's create a flow, and the bot can go out and look up the recent order from a system or look up a recent invoice and retrieve that information. That's actually Power Automate doing the legwork, but you know, Power Virtual Agents takes all the glory. So Power Automate really sits as the engine and the kind of the glue underneath all of that. So I wouldn't say don't start with it, but in a way it tends to come into its own as like a supporting piece first. But then, you know, I've got friends who work with that primarily and find that. So perhaps it's just my experience at coming at the other pieces first.
So my experience is that Power Automate's really good, as you say, to do automation processes. So I've got many Power Automates that run. So a couple of examples I can give people listening is that a lot of the social media posts that I use are automated using Power Automate. So I have lists in SharePoint with what I want sent out in social media. The Automate comes in at a time during the day, picks up that location, sends the information out, and then increments the list to another date in the future. And that can be then repeated over and over and over again without me having to intercede with it. And another one is that I wanted to recreate the GoToMeeting invite concept with invites to webinars I run on Teams. So I built that in Power Automate. So people, again, fill in a form that then takes their details, puts it into SharePoint, and then we'll send them an invite for that and do follow up. Now, the other good thing too, just before that, is the fact that Power Automate, you think at the top of the stack, what I like is that you can use that, and then if you want, you can graduate into Azure Logic Apps and then into Azure Functions. So as you improve your, and if you do want to go down that development path, you can really get to the some low level. So I like that capability.
Yeah, look, there's a really important thing here about the Power Platform in this no cliffs kind of story, because, you know, Power Virtual Agents is actually built on the bot framework. Power Automate has got logic, you know, like all of these things. You can go from the low code tools and then go into the high code tools when and if you want to. So even in Power Virtual Agents and concept there, you can say, well, I've built out, you know, my low-code chatbot, but someone, I want to do something more complex here. Someone's built, you know, skills, and I can just seamlessly bring those in. So yeah, there, you know, I talk a lot about it is a low-code platform, but then you can bring in those other tools, and you can graduate to those other tools or use them in combination. So it's not like an either or situation. If you choose to start with that you can't then extend into those other things. And those two examples you gave there of Power Automate are great, you know, personal productivity scenarios. You've talked there, you're working across different things as a form and it goes into SharePoint. And so it's really good at that kind of just connecting the pieces together and enabling those personal productivity things.
Yeah, so I think that's the thing that, again, is another interesting area where people do need to expand their understanding of the platform and look at it not as just email and, you know, OneDrive or file storage. They need to look at it as this platform which can bring all these services together. And, again, they all do what they do very, very well, but they are that up to a limit. Now, to get across that limit is the Power Automate, the Power Apps, the Power Platform gives you that capability. Now, that is obviously a step up for people to have that understanding, to understand how to link things together and do formulas. And again, it's like that analogy of stepping into Excel macros as well, which does require a little bit of investment, but the returns also are fantastic. So
yeah.
I think that, you know, my experience has been that, you know, start with something really simple, you know, a linear process, not something that's looping, and just get it to, again, to save a bit of time and grow up from there. The other bit of advice I would give people is, especially those who haven't had experience coding or doing sort of development, is to make sure that you do have good documentation. So, you know, something like OneNote is what I use. You put the information in there. It's always good to put comments. And that, I think, unfortunately, is one of the things that the Power Automate and those things do lack, is that ability to sort of add, you know, programmatical comments in there. So when you come back to it, or someone comes back to it, they can look at it and say, oh, that's why they did that. So
yeah, you've got a description box, but not quite.
Correct, exactly.
Not quite enough. Yeah.
It'd be good to have, like I said, you know, comments that aren't that you don't see. But again, that would be the other thing I would say, is the only thing that you've just got to be careful of is that you get something that works and it works really well, and then something changes underneath for some reason, like they reverse the dates or something, and it's like, you spend, you know, half a day trying to work out and troubleshoot something that really should have been fairly easy based on the comments. So that would sort of be my feedback. But again, I think that, as you say, there's with most SKUs of Microsoft 365, people have this for free. Now, the other thing is they don't have to start from scratch, do they? There's a whole range of templates plus what the community does as well.
So yes, the templates are amazing. That's the other thing I should say in terms of learning that's really, really good. So community, yes, both Power Automate and Power Apps have amazing templates in there that really help. So Power Automate, the way to learn Power Automate is around, there's different things to know depending on what connectors you're working with. So if you're using SharePoint as a connector in the examples there, there are certain actions you can take with the SharePoint connection, certain triggers. So it all works on the concept of triggers. triggers and actions. My trigger can be a data event, it can be a timer, a schedule, manual trigger, and then you take a series of actions. So the triggers and actions available for SharePoint are particular to SharePoint. If you're using OneDrive, it's different. If you're connecting to, you know, SAP, or that's a bad example because that connector's not quite there yet. If you're connecting out to an external system, you can connect to Zendesk or, you know, something like that, then that has different, you know, triggers and actions as well. So the templates are immensely helpful in that because they give you ideas about what you can do. And I find that if I'm starting with a new connector, picking up a template is the quickest way to get my head around it, go, oh yeah, that, and I'll edit these things. So you can take the templates and just use them as they are. And there's thousands in there that enable personal productivity across common, you know, especially across the Microsoft platform. But you can take them and tweak them. So you can just take them as they are, you can tweak them, or you can use them as learning tools. And then same with Power Apps. There are really, really good, you know, sample apps in there that you can just take and edit or take and learn from. You can spin up a standard sort of three screen app with one click. You just go choose my data source, if it's SharePoint or whatever it is, and say build a three screen app. And the first screen is a search screen. The second screen is I never remember whether the second and third in order, one of them is an edit screen and one of them's a create record screen, but bang, you've got an app and you can make it pretty and it's functional and off you go. So yeah, heaps of things built in, and even more so, I'm seeing more and more of that being added that makes it easy for new users to come along and just get started, because you don't have to just start with blank, and that makes it a whole lot easier.
So looking into the future, we've got this latest update and Dataflex and the abilities that it's going to give us and give the citizen developers. We've seen Microsoft's major focus on the Power Platform and Dynamics going forward. We've seen the Microsoft 365 platform, and we're looking at things like lists sudden beginning to appear probably this month as well, more features. Looking forward into the future, what do you see with the Power Platform? Which direction do you see it going in? Just to maybe give people a bit of a heads up, this is where I think it's sort of heading.
Yeah. So certainly more of this, you know, enabling remote work and enabling Teams. There's very much a direction there. I think this announcement is the opening of a huge range of capabilities and creative ideas there. So, you know, that bridging of those two things together. Certainly we are seeing, you know, mixed reality, artificial reality coming into the platform. So enabling, you know, being able to build your own apps that take advantage of that technology without using code. So there's a direction there, you know, being able to create a Power App and you know, use that to measure something, or to, you know, that mixed reality scenario. That's brand new functionality that's coming through. Blows my mind that can be done with no code. So we're right at the start of that journey. I think we're going to see more coming through there. The big one though that I see is just AI everywhere. So low code AI. There's a functionality in the platform called AI Builder, which allows you to build bring in sort of pre-built models, things like sentiment analysis, text classification, image detection. So again, this is all drawing on the goodness underneath Azure Cognitive Services, but it's lifting it up for people who don't have the first clue about that to use like a wizard style interface to bring those things in. So I see this across Dynamics as well in business applications, is using AI to help with the sales process, AI to help with customer service. So I think this infusion of artificial intelligence and sort of pre-baked in tools that just put AI in the hands of the users without them having to build that is the biggest thing we're seeing now, and that's gonna continue.
So I think again, we look at the progression from, you know, the desktop productivity tools around things like Excel, how you could, if you wanted to go down that path, really completely automate systems. And I have done this in Excel, creating reporting systems that were basically completely automated. But the downside, it was limited, obviously, typically to that user or to that file. But now we've moved into a SaaS-based environment where we can now share that and work with colleagues. And again, we're going to get this capability where the, you know, machine learning and the advantages that other people bring add up to this community knowledge that other people are just going to be able to build on top of and see these sort of solutions. So again, let's say that in the future, You wanted a leave request app or something, you'll probably find that it's just about completely built, or that you'll be able to download a template that does it for you.
Yeah.
The idea then for you is to go, right, that's my base. Now I want to add bells and whistles and do these other bits and pieces and push it that further step forward.
Yeah.
So do you see that sort of as a rounding off question, as we look to get to the end here, do you see this as is it a competition in a way between the traditional devs who are writing code, who are using Visual Studio, and the citizen developers? Or do you see that they're both going to potentially, you know, sort of continue on doing what they do well? Or is there a melding of the two? How do you see those sort of two separate demographics, you know, let's call them developers, in some way, shape or form? How do you see that progressing going forward?
Yeah, there's actually been a lot of chat around that within the Power Platform community, because I think, you know, the talk from Microsoft and around this platform does very much highlight and focus on the citizen developers. And I think sometimes, you know, from a traditional developer point of view, they feel like they're not part of that conversation. So there was actually there's a robust conversation going on all the time amongst those of us who work in this area on that. But then I've seen in the last 6 months or so, certainly there was a lot of stuff on Twitter, a lot of people getting behind this concept of a sort of pro code, low code unite. There was a pro devs conference, a particular one that was organized around Power Platform, like for developers. There are absolutely tools in there that citizen developers can't use, won't ever be able to use. And then the messaging, you know, I've noticed from Microsoft becomes around, this is a platform that enables all developers. So I would say at the moment, perhaps there's a healthy tension. I wouldn't say there's a great divide. And I would like to think, you know, I'm an optimist, but I see a lot of cooperation between the developers and citizen developers. Certainly the massive explosion of growth is coming from the citizen developer side, just because of the reality of how many apps need to be built and how many people have traditional development skills. Those two things don't align. So like it or not, this is where it's going. But there, I think there is still absolutely always a role for those, you know, for those traditional developers. And I think there's been a lot of kind of really robust discussion and healthy kind of bringing together of those communities within the Power Platform space that I've seen, certainly in the communities that I'm involved in.
Excellent. All right. Well, why don't you maybe give us a quick roundup and some reasons why, for those people who may not have dipped their toe into the water of the Power Platform, why they should be doing it. And again, you know, the benefits that they can implement for themselves and potentially for their businesses. And then if you want to give our listeners any resources and how they can then get in contact with you if they do have any further questions or follow up on any of the material that we've discussed.
Yeah. So look, I think, you know, I think the biggest reason to look at Power Platform is around this idea of high velocity, low code development. That's what it's all about. So if you're coming from a traditional developer background, you know, you're not still writing zeros and ones. Like there are things in there that you don't necessarily have to do from scratch. There's a lot of things in there where you can bring the skills you have into this platform, but do certain things much faster. If you're coming from a citizen developer side, you don't even know that you're called that. So the idea here is that it's really about being able to enable all types of developers. And I think the ability to build things, you know, there's so much engineering going on here to create a tool set that anybody can pick up and build a thing with. I would say stop using Excel as a business system. I came from that world. I actually worked on the, you know, on the customer side before I got into what I do now. I used to torture Excel and Excel macros with things I shouldn't do. So if you are struggling to solve business problems and you're stuck with tools like, you know, I mean, Excel is awesome as a spreadsheet, but using it to solve every business problem is going beyond its remit, really. So, you know, low code tool set to build chatbots, to build apps. For me, the way it all comes together, though, is the real strength of it. You know, I can build a chatbot that can go out and retrieve information using Power Automate. I can have an app that I can press a button that can do something in Power Automate. You know, all of these things are individual pieces, but they work together in a way that's just, you know, absolutely. I'm constantly astounded by what's possible to do with this without writing code. So that's that's where I'm at with this stuff.
Okay, excellent. Well, how can people follow what you're doing, get in contact with you, see what, you know, what sort of work you're doing in this area?
I have a YouTube channel, so I'm relatively easy to find. Lisa Crosby, Crosby with an IE on the end. There's not many with my name, so I'm relatively easy to find. I have a YouTube channel with some videos there that's just under my name, where I do some sort of introductory, you know, very short kind of introductory material to this. If you want to dip your toe in, there's some things there that can help you get you started. I'm all over LinkedIn. Again, relatively easy to find. Very happy to connect. Just drop me a note to let me know where you came across me, so that it's better than just a random connection. Twitter as well. A bit of water cooler chat going on Twitter. I'm Lisa M. Crosby on Twitter, so you'll find me there. And I also do my own podcast with a friend of mine, Megan Walker, called The Up Podcast. So if you want to know more about business applications and Power Platform, we're chatting about that once a week over there.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure that I get those links, Lisa, and I'll put those into the show notes for people on this episode. I'll take this opportunity to thank Lisa for all that information. I'm sure that the platform will continue to upgrade and march forward and be a centerpiece in the Microsoft solution, and we can hopefully tap her to come back and give us any updates, any new and exciting news. But watch out for that Dataflex component to start appearing, and then what you can do with it if you're not in Power Apps. 100% recommend that you start playing around with it. So again, Lisa, thank you very much for your time today on this episode.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I also take the opportunity to thank everybody else for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.